Hey there, everybody. Welcome to Up All Night, a horror anthology podcast. My name is Cortland, and with me today is the guy that's always pulling out flaming bouquets. It's Brandon. How you doing, Brandon?
Hey, Cortland. I'm doing great.
Awesome.
Would you like this flaming bouquet?
No. Please stomp it out. So, Brandon, we have a very special guest today. We've got from Splat Attack Podcast. It's Alex. How are you doing, Alex?
I'm terrified to be here.
As you should be.
That's I'm the very appropriate excited. Reaction.
Thank you for having me. I'm really excited about this.
My pleasure. Yeah. So I've worked with Splat Attack Podcast a couple of times. You have a wonderful show that I like to watch on YouTube because you guys got all that fancy visual stuff going on.
We do. Takes forever.
That's why we haven't ventured into it. Yeah. Also, Brandon's internet. Sorry, bro. It's awful. We can't do it. So, Alex, I just want to say thank you so much for joining us. Is this your first adventure into Tales from the Crypt?
It is my first adventure into Tales from the Crypt, unless you count watching the intro back when it was on cable TV and then being terrified of it and then would quickly change the channel. I did used to watch Tales from the Crypt Keeper, the cartoon, on Saturday mornings.
Oh, yeah. We haven't ventured into that show yet.
And I loved the game show, Secret of the Crypt Keeper's Haunted House. Loved that. Oh. I watched that all the time. But as far as Tales from the Crypt goes, no, this is my first time checking it out.
I don't think I've ever heard of this game show you're talking about.
It's pretty freaking awesome. It actually won a few awards for it, especially for effects and things for live kids game shows. It was really cool. I'll have to send you a link sometimes so you can check it out, because there are a few clips on YouTube.
Wow. Okay, yeah, I'd love to check that out. My imagining of it is like Legends. So is it like Legends of the Hidden Temple then? Do they have to like go through the crypt at the end? Is it crazy?
It is very similar to Legends of the Hidden Temple. And they're very, very similar to that, because they do have two teams okay. of two. And they would have to do a series of various obstacles. Mm-hmm. And there's a lot of CGI involved. So in a way, it's kind of like Nick Arcade also, where they would have to walk into this room and they're supposed to protect these tombstones. And it's somebody in a green screen outfit with this giant Nerf blaster shooting at the kids. And they're having to swat the balls away, and then for every one of the gravestones that are still up, they get a question, and then they get points for the questions that they answer correctly. What you see on the episode is you see the little platform they're standing on, the kids and the gravestones, but it's this huge pit, and there's a giant skull that is talking to them. And the fire, the balls are coming out of its eyes and mouth and nose, and they're having to swat it away. And then the skull asks the kids these questions, but if they fall off the platform, they spontaneously combust. Oh my God. You can't fall off the platform. Wow. And the whole game is like this. And then at the end, much like the Hidden Temple, it's this huge haunted house that they have to go through to find skulls.
Okay.
And then by the end they have to get out and count how many skulls they got, and the team that got the most skulls gets the most points.
Wow. Okay, so it's kind of like Sounds Legend amazing. Of the Temple if Olmec ate the children, if they got the question right.
Yes. I mean, one of them, and I'm sorry to go on the tangent, but my favorite one was this lava pit where you have a kid who is in a cage and it is slowly being lowered into the lava pit while another kid has to take these bags of skulls across a balance beam, drop off the bag, go back across the balance beam, grab another bag, and do it again. If the kid falls off the beam, he falls in the lava and, again, explodes. If you don't do it fast enough and your team member gets lowered into the lava, well, then they explode. So it's... Wow. And again, it's all green screen. The kids are just landing into a pad. And the CGI, it's 90s CGI, so it looks almost like PS1 graphics, but it's so much fun.
That sounds incredible. You want to know what's really interesting? I love it when they have like this adult show and then they make like kids animated television shows about it.
Yeah. Why was there such a strong push to make the Crypt Keeper like a child-friendly mascot?
I don't know. Because they did that either. With like the Toxic Avenger. And in that movie, somebody runs over the head of a child and it like explodes.
Yeah.
And I'm like, I don't know if that's my first choice for an animated television show, but...
I mean, I watched the RoboCop cartoon every morning before school.
What the fuck were people thinking back in the 90s?
Yeah, they had Terminator toys.
I did have a couple of Alien toys, too, yeah.
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 They were awesome.
But I will say, I was very, very interested in the Crypt Keeper.
Yeah.
I would try to watch the intro and just the little pre-title sequence. Or not the pre-title, the little opener. I would try
just to make watch it a little those. Farther each time.
Yeah, just because the Crypt Keeper interested me. But then once the episode started, I was out.
I love that. We just got done watching Tales from the Crypt Season 5, Episode 9, Creep Course. So I'm going to ask Alex first, what did you think of like your first adventures in Tales from the Crypt? How'd you like the episode?
I loved it. I really loved it. It was everything that I've heard about the show. I've heard that it's fun. It's sleazy. It's not to be taken seriously. It's highly over the top. It's a big comic book because Tales from the Crypt was a big comic book. Mm-hmm. And I was looking forward to going into it. I knew Robert Zemeckis was involved. And I want to say Steven Spielberg was involved in some form. But probably through Robert Zemeckis, since the two of them did a lot at the time. And just going through the opening credits, I had no idea that, I mean, Danny Elfman did the music, and I had no idea that Walter Hill and all these other big name Hollywood people were involved, and I thought that was really cool. I loved the intro. I had seen it so many times as a kid, and you know how sometimes you see something as a kid, you love it, but then you watch it again as an adult, and you're like, wow, this is not what I remembered it to look like. Mm-hmm. It still looks fantastic. I'm sure it's just a miniature, at least the house, but everything about it still looks so good. It holds up so well. The theme songs is still stuck in my head. And as far as the episode itself, I was really happy to see the star power that this episode had, which I'm sure is a fairly common thing. Cause I've seen some of the episodes that you guys have talked about. I mean, you had Tim Curry in a previous episode. And it's really impressive to see the cast that they've gotten for a lot of these shows who were still popular then. It's not like Are You Afraid of the Dark and Goosebumps where you would find future stars. This one, they were already stars established, and that was really cool. And the fact that these are so big, over-the-top, goofy things, and these actors just got to roll with it and have fun, which, being a performer myself, I really liked that. So, no, this was a fun episode, and I'm looking forward to going into more detail about it.
Awesome. How about you, Brandon? Did you like the episode?
Yeah, it was great.
Awesome.
Of course. You know I love that Egypt shit. Yeah, anytime a mummy shows up, I'm right there. I'm for it. This episode had kind of a lot of like twists and, you know, characters doing unexpected things. And for the most part, I saw where some of the things were going, but it did manage to surprise me a few times, which, you know, that's I really appreciate. Good. Yeah.
Yeah. That's cool. My first thoughts about this episode when I was watching it, I was like, this is kind of like the most Are You Afraid of the Dark-esque episode that, besides the gore and stuff, you know?
Yeah, you could edit it to be more like an Are You Afraid of the Dark episode, for sure.
The first, like, half to three quarters of this episode is just kind of like kids at school and stuff, and it's like I know exactly where this is going, like this is very predictable kind of thing, but then you're kind of surprised towards the end. But yeah, I was like, if there's any episode that Alex could be on that was more so of like an Are You Afraid of the Dark episode, this one would be it, I think.
Yeah, I was like, where's Danny Cooksey?
Exactly. Yes. Yeah, this is basically the tale of the Guardian's Curse, except no, somebody does get together with the mummy at the end too. Yeah.
You always got to have somebody banging a mummy.
Yeah, that's a requirement. It was good, though. I like the episode. I'm pretty excited to talk about it. There's a lot of emotions that I can have a lot of fun with while I'm talking about the notes and everything. So I think we should just get on into it. What do you guys think?
Yeah, sounds good.
All right. We're 11 minutes in. We got to get into it sometime. So our episode begins, and we're looking at some Egyptian stuff. There's like a bust of a pharaoh or something. There's a little sphinx that's chilling on a book titled Who's Who. I don't know why that's Egyptian, but whatever. The camera pans back, and we see our best friend. It's the Crypt Keeper. He's there. He's got a guy with him that's got his mouth, like, wide open. He's laying in front of him. And he welcomes us as creeps and says that he'll be with us in a moment, since He's just in the middle of cramming for his finals. And we see him stuff a piece of crumpled paper into this man's mouth, and then he shuts it for him.
I don't know if it is or not, because they don't say in the credits, but that looks like John Kaiser.
Oh, Kassir?
Kassir. It looked like him, because obviously he did the voice for Crypt Keeper, but I was wondering, is that the voice?
Every once in a while in these intros, the Crypt Keeper just has like a random dude down there that he usually murders. And I just assume it's like the casting crew. They're like, all right, we need somebody to just lay here. And they're like, all right, my turn.
And has anybody commented on the fact that John Kassir, did I pronounce that right that time?
I think so.
He also was the voice of Buster Bunny on Tiny Toon Adventures. And there,
you know, I didn't know that.
And there was an episode called Toons from the Crypt where Buster Bunny was being the Crypt Keeper. So he had to do a slight alteration between both those voices.
You know, I have vague memories of watching that episode. I remember loving Tiny Toons, but I don't think I saw like a lot of it.
Now that I'm thinking about it, like, I can hear it so clearly. Of course that's him.
But yeah, I was curious if that was John or not.
It might be. So he drops his bombshell, right? He says, I bet you didn't know your pal, the Crypt Keeper, was still in school. Okay, he says it like ghoul. Sorry.
Yeah. He really tries. He really tries to push that one.
The puns. And I didn't know he was still in school. So that's cool. Skule, like Marsha Brady.
Skule.
He brags a little, saying, as a matter of fact, he's top of his class in Harvard. Goddamn. And he giggles. But that brings him to tonight's all-frighter. It concerns some college kids that have their own idea of higher education. In a little bit of hackademia he calls Creep Course. And we get the picture for this episode, and it features a girl in front, dressed like an ancient Egyptian woman, I suppose. I don't know. She barely has any clothes on, you guys. Like, she's got these, like, circle things around her boobs. I don't know.
I mean, I'm hooked already. I'm interested to see what happens next.
She looks pretty scared, though, because there's, like, this mummy behind her that looks to be walking her way. So... That was the cover.
Like,
Emotep.
It's got a woman in skimpy clothing and a monster. Like, that's Tales from the Crypt in a nutshell right here.
Yes.
Yeah. We fade into the episode to a little ancient Egyptian-esque musical sting, and we walk on inside a college class where the teacher is talking about, you guessed it, ancient Egypt, you guys. He says... They were the dopest people, and all the pharaohs were, like, so powerful, and they commanded loyalty and fear throughout an empire that stretched all through Syria. Anyway, let's talk about the legend of Pharaoh Ramset, a.k.a. the mummy that wouldn't die. So, instead of talking about things that are real, he decides to tell a fairy tale. Really great. Look, if I was in this college course and he was like, okay, let's talk about legends, I'd be like, but I paid you money to, like, learn things. But,
Quiet, you.
We look out at the class and we see our main character Stella, and somebody whispers out a whoa to the vaguest hint of that legend. It's great. I love hearing that stuff. Our teacher, his name is Finley, says it seems here that Pharaoh Ramset was a jealous and possessive fella, and the object of his obsession was a beautiful maiden, Princess Nefra. Unfortunately, Ramset tossed his mortal coil before consummating his relationship with the lovely Nefra, so even though he was mummified and shit, he would leave his tomb on the anniversary of his death and each year after to search for the Princess Nefra. So you guys got that written down? I expect notes by the end of this podcast episode.
It's committed to memory.
Ah, yes. Perfect. Some dude was so horny, he came back to life. Got it.
Exactly. Needless to say, Ramset's jealous disposition and bad temper hadn't improved in death, and the local citizens feared his annual visits. So they were forced to come up with a little plan. Each year, they'd deliver a maiden to the tomb as a human sacrifice. Each time the mummy would expect to see his beloved Nefra in front of him, but each time he would be so disappointed. Brandon and Alex.
I love how he said
okay.
that.
Okay.
Oh, I know. I'm going to grab a clip of that for sure.
Okay. I got to share this with you. First of all, I'm already terrified because one, it's Jeffrey Jones.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which already there's so much to be terrified about with Jeffrey Jones. But with that one line, just that disappointed. Just the way he says that. I don't know if you two had seen it, but it's one of those movies that everyone just dogs and they hate it. And I understand why, but I absolutely love this movie.
There's a good chance Brandon will love it.
Howard the Duck. I love Howard the Duck. And Jeffrey Jones was in Howard the Duck. He played a scientist. Half the movie, he was just, you know, fine. But then the second half, he gets possessed by the dark overlord of the universe.
As you
and
do.
For the rest of the movie, he talks like that. So that voice is the rest of the performance of this character. And it's that way throughout the whole thing. And it's so, I'm not Jenning anymore. It's so weird. As soon as he said that, this in that cadence, I was like, oh, there's the dark overlord. If he could just stay that way, because I was hoping, oh, please tell me he's the mummy. And then he turns into the mummy and does that voice throughout the rest of throughout the climax. Oh. But no,
that would have been great.
I love that. Did you guys know that Howard the Duck is a Marvel character?
Yes. Yes, I did.
Yeah.
<It's> so ridiculous. I've never seen Howard the Duck. Brandon, have you seen Howard the Duck?
I have seen Howard the Duck.
I'll have to
My
watch.
Dad loves Howard the Duck.
Your dad does?
Yeah, he does.
He also loves zombie movies. He says that we're going to start a podcast together. I don't think it's going to happen.
So any day now.
Yeah. So he goes on to say that Ramset would explode in anger and take his rage out on the innocent woman. And honestly, that shit was just too horrible to describe. But it kept the old boy off the streets. And everybody giggles because it's funny. Now, while he's telling us the backstory to this episode, we look out across the students. There's Stella, who I already mentioned. She's got glasses on, so she's a nerd. Okay.
Yeah, you know right away.
What?
There's also Reggie Skolnick, who we watched ignore the teacher's lecture to check out some like football plays in a notebook or something. So with these bare minimum character traits, I think we can all guess exactly how this episode's going to go. And guess what? I wasn't wrong. I knew it. Finley goes on to tell the class that they have a test on Friday covering the first three Egyptian kingdoms. And he asks Reggie what those kingdoms were again. And Reggie snaps to look up because he got found out, you know, he's not paying attention. And Reggie looks all wide-eyed, being all, the first three kingdoms, they're... And he looks through his notes, but Finley snaps at him to look through his notes, even though he was just looking through his notes.
Yeah.
That a lot. Or, you know, not his playbook or his manual, whatever. Reggie then thinks on that for a couple of seconds, and he says, the second dynasty? And Finley's all, meh, wrong.
Gosh.
He's like, kingdoms, dumb, not dynasties. And Reggie then admits that he doesn't know. So Finley calls on Stella to help Mr. Numbskull. Oops, he means Mr. Skolnick. Stella's a smarty, so she tells him the answer, which is the early dynasty, the old kingdom, and first intermediate period. So, like, one of those questions actually did, like, have dynasty in the name, one of the answers for it. So, I don't know.
Jackass.
To Reggie a little bit, yeah. To be like, no, it's kingdoms, dumb. And then one of the answers actually was dynasty almost. Like, come on.
Yeah, he just power tripping.
He just hates jocks.
I think he does hate jocks. He's got a problem. Yeah, he must have been bullied.
He hates that Brian turned into Brad.
Yeah, exactly. Finley gets all sassy some more with Reggie and tells him that if he fails this test, he's going to be ineligible to participate in the one activity that he truly excels at. And while Finley personally ranks football lower than dying as a cultural experience, he believes that it has some importance to Reggie and his classmates. Then Finley dismisses the class and we warp over to Stella working at her job as like a lunch lady for the college cafeteria. She's got like a tray of glasses in her hands and she's dressed all in white for some reason, which like if you're working with food, why would you dress all in white?
I don't get it. Terrible.
Stupid idea. Whatever. This college is dumb. She puts some silverware away and then the glasses and stuff. And then up walks Reggie, who offers to help her with this not difficult at all task. She tells him that she's fine. And Reggie's all, hey, wait, you're Stella, right? And she just kind of like awkwardly stares at him and then nods her head saying, yeah, I am. And Reggie introduces himself, and Stella giggles a little, kind of like embarrassed, because she's such a nerd, you know?
Yeah, and to go along with the nerd, in case you, if you can't hear it in Cortland's voice, she does everything in full Velma. Everything.
She's very Velma, yeah.
Because she's got the little nasally voice with everything that she says. So, yeah, I totally hear everything as full on 90s nerd. And the thing that boys would do when they're playing nerds, she does the same thing.
Yeah, she wears like a vest when she's not working.
She constantly like force pushes up her glasses, like,
oh yes,
it's crazy. They were like, all right, lady, play a nerd, and she was like, I'm on it, and she did it.
And Anthony Michael Hall,
yes,
who is the Reggie,
yep,
yeah, he, I can't tell if he's playing a character or if he's just being himself, because he is full on just punk throughout this whole thing. And he is kind of that way anyway. But I don't think he's acting at all, and I think she's overacting, which makes for a good combination.
Agreed. Okay, so Stella tells him that she only has a few more hours of work here. Anyway, time to get back to work, because like she's really just trying to get away from him a little bit. I think she's been bullied or something, you know, her whole life, because she's such a nerd. And having a jock come in front of you, like, you just assume you're going to get bullied.
Yeah.
She goes over to set some dishes in place, and Reggie follows her saying, man, that stupid teacher is always on my case, am I right? I hate how he treats me in class. And Stella's about to agree or something, but Reggie tells her that he's got feelings too. It was pretty embarrassing for him. Stella tells him she knows, child. And Reggie hunkers down to say, now, Stella, I'm going to flunk this midterm unless you help me. Then he kind of begs her to help him, and she shakes her head and walks away saying, gosh, I don't know. And he begs her some more, and she's just trying to get some fucking work done. And she places some cloched chicken meals up on a table. And he asks her, hey, since you know this stuff inside and out, can you help me study? And she's all, yeah, I mean, I guess, whatever.
I'm not a brain or anything, but I do take excellent notes. I mean, we could go over them together, if that's what you mean.
And Reggie excitedly asks her if they can go over them this afternoon. So Stella smiles, saying, yeah, but, like, where should we meet? And Reggie suggests the library at 3 o'clock. So Stella smiles and nods, and Reggie tells her it's a date then. Then Reggie leaves, and we pop over to the library. Exciting.
Studying.
Yeah. We see Stella hunkered down with a book, and she nerdishly pushes up her glasses and then checks her watch. Over with Reggie, he walks into the library and jockishly takes off his sunglasses. These characters. He sits down across from Stella and apologizes for being late. And Stella plays it cool here. She's all like, oh, I didn't even notice you was late. Even though we saw her notice that Hughes was late. Then she stops and she looks over at him saying, wait, but you didn't even bring any of your stuff. But she's like, oh, that's fine. You know, I got everything we need here. I got the pens, the pencils, the work, you know, everything. Reggie then drops a bombshell saying, Stella,
this isn't going to work.
She asks what the fuck he's on about. And he explains that studying isn't going to help him because he's just not cut out for that studying stuff, you know. He's tried real hard before, but it just never even sticks. The only thing he's good at is football. Stella deflates quite a bit here, being all like, okay, sure, I get it. And she starts packing up her shit. But Reggie tells her to stop, saying, Stella, wait, there is something that you can do for me. And she wonders what. And Reggie tells her that Finley keeps a collection of old Egyptian stuff in his house. So you can make an appointment to go over there and look at his junk.
And now I'm terrified again.
Is that what he says?
Oh, it might be.
Jeffrey Jones wants a student to come over and look at his junk.
Yes.
The only thing that I found really, really difficult to swallow in this scene was that it was a girl. If it was the other way around, it'd be even more creep factor.
I don't know. Look, I don't know if he does say to go look at his junk. I think he did, but I put like parentheses phrasing for myself, so I'm going to keep it in.
Okay.
But I guess you can go and look at your teacher's junk for extra credit. So,
oh, gosh.
That's pretty great.
I got to say, just going on this this scene and then the one previously, the whole dynamic between Stella and Reggie,
mm-hmm.
This whole thing is played out exactly the way we would, most audiences would, because we've seen this 100 times. The nerd and the jock and I need your help and then you know he's gonna find a way to cheat and utilize her. I mean we know all this, so it's like, oh man, I gotta sit there through this. But two things, both performers in this know what they're doing, and it's full on stereotypical, and they really played it up, and it's kind of fun watching them ham this scene up. And also the scenes go pretty quick.
They do.
And it goes straight into a lot of the fun stuff for the remainder half of the episode. The thing I wasn't expecting was, hey, let's go over to his house so I can get the midterm. I'm like, go to his house?
What? Yeah, that's a leap.
That was a big leap. But, you know, Tales from the Crypt. I'm like, oh, I'll go along with it. Who cares? It's a horror thing. I know we're going to end up seeing a mummy somewhere. So
right.
but I do like how quickly it goes and how fast. How fun they're having.
I appreciate it too, because they could have spent a lot more time, because that's what happens sometimes in Tales from the Crypt episodes, is they spend a lot of time doing the build up and then you don't really get that big of a payoff sometimes. I mean, granted, it's the opposite sometimes too, where you get a really great payoff and it's awesome. This episode kind of is in the middle of that, and it works really well. I think like the pacing for it is pretty good.
Yeah, because we know what's going to happen. We don't need a lot of time for this, and they don't. They cook through it.
No, the second I saw Stella with glasses on, I was like, I know exactly what's going to happen.
Yep.
So.
Yep.
25 minutes is not a long time for a story. Like, they've got to be very economical with the pacing. Like, just put glasses on or you'll get it.
Yep,
exactly. So he suggests that she goes in for that extra credit, you know. The teacher would go for that for like a second because he really wants somebody to look at his junk. She could even do it tomorrow night. So Stella asks him, why would I do that? And Reggie tells her, because when you have him distracted, I'll go in there and make a copy of the midterm. And Stella thinks on that for about a second before she starts shaking her head saying she can't do that. Then she gets up and she runs away. But she drops a book because she's a nerd. She has to pick it up. Great.
It's like a leprechaun. You drop all the sugar or whatever it was. They got to pick it up. Drop a handful of books in front of a nerd. Oh, I got to pick those up. I can't help it. I got to count them all.
Now she's got to drink a vial of spiders. So now we're over with Stella at the bookshelf, and she's putting those books away because, I don't know, she doesn't need to study anymore. But Reggie slides up saying, girl, I know how people look at me. They think I have it made. Like, I don't have a care in the world. But they're wrong, Stella. I have so many cares, and I'm really scared because football is the only option I have, and it's about to go down the drain. So Stella shakes her head again, saying, but that would be wrong, and goes to walk away, but Reggie follows her. This whole scene is like Stella trying to get away, and Reggie just follows her over and over again.
Yeah.
But he's saying, if anybody's going to get in trouble for this, it's going to be me, not you. I promise you, I'll protect you, and no one is going to know. After the game, there's going to be this really cool party for the team, and I want you to be my date for it. And she protests again, saying, like, no, you don't. Who wants to date me? I'm a nerd. You know, I'm Stella. But Reggie counters that, saying,
why wouldn't I? Because you're Stella the bookworm? Stella the wallflower? Huh? That's what they think, isn't it? But they're wrong, aren't they? Just like they're wrong about me.
Stella tells him, you're really not that wrong. So she walks away again. She knows who she is, okay? She's Stella.
She's Velma, and that's fine.
Yeah.
And that's what I'm talking about. This one particular bit of dialogue. You don't need to see her get bullied. You don't need to see him be a punk in previous scenes. We know these two characters. We know these two stereotypes. And they got through so much backstory in one bit of dialogue. And that's all we needed.
Yeah. Yeah. They're like, you get it, audience. These characters, we're stereotypes. We don't have to be doing a whole backstory. We could just talk about it in a library. And it's fine. So she walks away some more. And then Reggie literally corners her in a corner. He, like, slightly pushes her up against the wall and takes off her glasses, saying that he sees the real Stella. And Reggie can see what everybody's missing. So Stella wipes her eyes, saying, well, I can't see anything without my glasses.
Velma!
Yeah. Then Reggie pushes his face up to hers and smooches her on the lips. And he hands her back the glasses, which she puts on. And then we cut to her putting her glasses on at night in front of Finley's house. So we're here, you guys.
I'm so happy to be here.
Finley greets Stella and invites her inside, and she thanks him as he closes the door and thanks her for letting her inside to check out his junk. Finley tells her his house is always open to all the students, and he wishes more of them would have some interest and curiosity.
I'm here. Sure you do.
Anyway, let's head downstairs. Let's get downstairs, you guys. That's where all his stuff's at, you know? So Stella follows him downstairs, and there is indeed a whole bunch of junk down here. Stella exclaims, it's like a museum. And Finley tells her, it's his grandpa's, who was an archaeologist that explored the tombs in the Valley of the Kings, and all these artifacts are real valuable. So instead of being in a museum, he stole them all.
I gotta say, first, because I watched this episode twice, I completely missed the whole thing the first time watching about him telling her that all this was from my grandpa and all that stuff, because when my first thought was, how can you afford to buy all this Egyptian stuff with your teacher's salary? There's no freaking way. But later in the scene, he has a very similar conversation with Reggie, and I'm like, oh, okay. And then when I watched it the second time, I'm like, oh yeah, he said that totally clearly earlier in the previous scene, and I had totally missed it. But I was glad they emphasized it a bit later, and I like that idea. I like that it was handed down from generation to generation, that kind of thing. I thought that was pretty cool. It did give a bit of backstory I mean, yes, it's Tales from the Crypt. Yes, it's you're not supposed to take this seriously. But at the same time, I was like, okay, that's a big leap for you to have a freaking tomb in your basement. Okay, nope, I get it now. Okay.
It was just handed down from generation. Yeah, grandpa, it's an inheritance. He is, well, he's a boomer, but like his parents hoarded all the stuff. And when they died, they were like, it's yours now. You know, just like all of us will have to deal with someday.
Man, I can't wait to inherit what my parents left for me.
Yes, family curses and all that.
I don't even have a basement, but I'm sure there's one hidden somewhere in that house.
Stella walks over to the wall asking, whoa, what's this? And Finley compliments her on her eye and that what she's looking at is the pride and joy of his collection. An actual burial chamber completely intact. Stella can't believe that he's got an entire tomb in his basement because that's ridiculous.
Because it's very unbelievable. How does that get there?
Excavated and I don't know. I mean, I can't even imagine putting a pool table in a basement. I don't know how you get that kind of stuff down there, but he's got a whole ass tomb. Who knows? Finley offers for her to look out inside, and he knocks once on the door, which slowly and automatically opens up to a new room that's got a sarcophagus in it. Over with Reggie, because he's still in this episode, he's making his way inside and looks around a little bit. With Stella, she walks on into this tomb saying, gosh, it's cold in here. But wait, how'd these torches get lit? And Finley tells her, like I said, everything's ready. Which, I don't remember him saying that. But Stella turns around, likely sensing danger, and is like, I'm gonna head out. But Finley gets all creepy, saying, bullshit.
Yep, there it is.
That voice again.
Stella busts into a run and ducks under Finley's arms, but she's too slow and gets grabbed. Finley starts trying to carry her back into the tomb, but Stella's grabbing onto the walls and shit. And she sees Reggie walking down the stairs and calls out for him to come and help. And Reggie looks on, saying, Finley, you son of a bitch, and walks over to help Stella. He grabs her and holds her close and asks Finley,
what's the matter with you? Can't you do anything right?
And then he grabs Stella's head and throws her into the tomb.
Betrayal.
And Finley walks on out and closes the door with Reggie's help. Did you guys see that coming?
No. This threw me.
I didn't either. Because, like, in the library scene and stuff, like, the actors, yeah, they're hamming it up, but, like, I was like, okay, Reggie's a pretty good dude, you know? Like, he hadn't done anything wrong.
I still don't know when this agreement was made.
Yeah.
Like, at what point?
Here's my timeline of it. So he's like, hey, okay, meet me at the library at 3 o'clock. And she's like, okay. And in the meantime, why he was late is because he was talking to Finley. Because at first I was like, oh, is this something that him and Finley do, like, every year? Because, like, spoilers, that story at the beginning isn't going to come back into play here. But no, I think this is a one-time deal.
Yeah.
And I think instead of being like,
yeah,
I'm going to go study, I'm going to try and just like cheat my way into a good grade. Which, spoilers, he doesn't get a good grade anyway.
I have to, like, I wish I could have seen that conversation. Like, how it went from like, hey, is there anything I can do to get a good grade? To where Jeffrey Jones has to like speak around it. Like, maybe if you bring some woman to be sacrificed to my basement, I don't know.
Now, see, I would imagine that this whole thing was planned by the teacher before he started with the bad grades.
Yeah.
He knows he's going to have to do the sacrifice, and he already doesn't like football. I mean, he says that clearly at the beginning, how much he despises it. Mm-hmm. And I need to find a plausible way, the most believable way, to get a sacrifice over here. But I also... It's super creepy for the teacher to invite the kid.
Yeah.
Right. So do you think this whole thing, him calling on Reggie,
yeah,
and knowing he's going to get the answer wrong, and then calling on Stella to like bring attention to both of the characters, and
yeah, yeah, I think he
create that symbiotic relationship.
I think he full on got Reggie, because Reggie is failing. He knows he's failing, and completely insults him in class and all that stuff. I mean, I'm sure none of that was staged. I'm sure that was all as it normally is. But
no,
then
it was all a setup, and Reggie actually knew about the Three Kingdoms all along.
Here's the thing. Everything started when he got Stella in his class, and he took one look at her and said, that's a virgin right there. I have to sacrifice her.
Yep, there's the one. That's the one that I'm going to have to... And then told him, I need her to come over to the place. I probably
need to show her my junk.
Yeah.
She's wearing a fanny pack. Yeah, she's the one.
I highly doubt that he told Reggie everything, but had this plan, and Reggie's so desperate because this is his future. And if he doesn't mm-hmm. pass this class, okay, fine, I'll do it. And already we know that he's just a punk anyway. And like you guys have said, I didn't see this twist coming. I saw just the fact that she was going to get in trouble and he was going to throw her under the bus, because that's the trope that we've always seen. And in a way, that's what happens, but not to this degree. And I did chuckle a little bit at first, because I was thinking, oh, come on, with the way they were not putting up a fight. I should say the way the teacher was not putting up a fight, because Reggie looks at him and says, oh, you son of a bitch, and comes over and grabs her hands, because she's holding on to the door frame and he's holding her by her waist and legs and pulling her back. As soon as Reggie just grabbed her hands, her feet and legs are now on the ground. Like, the teacher just didn't put up any fight. He let her go. And I'm thinking, oh, come on, you guys, no, stop. That you put up a bigger fight. I mean, come on. And then the way he looked at Reggie looked at the teacher was like, what's the matter with you? I started to laugh. I was like, are you, that's your delivery? And then the very next line was, because there was too much of a pregnant pause. It's like, oh, no. Okay, he's in on it. Within that 2 seconds. And they, can't you do anything right, and shoved her in. I'm like, yep, okay, there it is. Yep, that makes sense for why he didn't put up much of a fight. I'm like, oh, man, that's so mean to give her hope and then throw it.
That was a beautiful thing. I like when he grabs her head and just pushes her into the tomb. It was pretty funny. I like the episodes where they look like they're having some fun, you know?
Oh, yeah.
So inside the tomb, Stella runs up to the door and starts banging on it, asking, what the hell is going on? Outside the tomb, Finley is all out of breath, and he says, God damn, women are getting stronger these days, huh? Must be that damn workout trend. Oh, you know.
Damn women and their working out.
It's ridiculous.
Hey there, everybody. Cortland here, your good buddy and your steady buddy. Thank you so much for joining us today, whether this is your first episode or you've listened to everything we've got. We're so thankful for you spending some time with us. I just want to give a special thank you to the Splat Attack crew for joining us for episodes of Up All Night. They've all been such a blast to work with, and I'm really excited to welcome another member next week, so stay tuned. If you do want to check out Splat Attack, take a look at their YouTube channel. They have plenty of videos and interviews with actors and crews of Nickelodeon from the 90s. Just search up Splat Attack on YouTube. If you'd like to help support Up All Night, consider becoming a patron at patreon.com/privateisland. We have a ton of bonus episodes for you to enjoy, like our plot points where we cover your favorite movies from the past. This week, we talked about The Parent Trap from 1998. I'd like to take a moment to thank our current patrons, The Best, Venice Witch, Tristan, Redemption, Lyle, Eddie, Rad Magical, Faith, and Shane, The Goths, Stephen, Matt, Aaron, Brittany, Sid, and Corey, The Citizens of Carlsville, Sarah, Mr. Normal, Matt, Keith, Christy, Angela, and Meredith, and your boys and girls, Kathy, Farron, Bryce, and Brian. Thank you for your support, everybody. Brandon and I truly appreciate it. Up All Night is all over social media, so check us out and give us a follow. You can find us on Instagram at Up All Night Podcast, on Twitter at UANPod, on YouTube at Up All Night HA Podcast, and on TikTok at Private Island Presents. Follow me on Twitch at twitch.tv/PrivateIslandC, where I play games live. It's a great chance to interact with me live, as I always love to see you guys there. I have a bunch of Are You Afraid of the Dark, Goosebumps, and Tales from the Crypt soundbites for you to play during the stream. I'd like to take a moment to thank the Benevolent Badger for their work on the music for our show, aside from this theme dating start from Undertale, composed by Toby Fox. I'd also like to thank Brandon for his work on the artwork. Thanks so much for listening in. For now, I'll let you get back to the episode, and I will talk with you next week. Bye, everybody. Reggie pushes Finley's belly, telling him he's just kind of out of shape, and Finley doesn't like that very much. So Reggie suggests that they get out of here, but Finley's all, nah, I got one thing to do first. And he walks over to a little bugle horn that he's got down there in the basement, and he blows on it, which sounds terrible. Inside the tomb, Stella's still banging on the door when the bugle horn blast just, like, reverberates in this tomb. And then she looks over at the sarcophagus, which bursts open.
Emotep.
We're back outside. Finley's all tuckered out from all that blowing and tells Reggie that he needs to go upstairs because he's got to get a drink. He's just so damn thirsty. Back in the tomb, Stella steps around and hides behind a column, and we look and see that there's the mummy inside with her. She backs herself into a corner as the mummy slowly approaches her. Instead of like trying to get away, she kind of slinks down into the corner and she starts muttering like a prayer or something.
Yeah. I don't really know. She can very easily kind of just move away. She could just run circles around this mummy for hours, but no, she just sits in the corner and waits for it to come to her.
Yeah,
interesting strategy.
I totally got Benny from the Mummy vibes with all those different the necklaces and and doing all those different prayers. It's like, is that what she's doing right now?
She looks over, she sees a headdress on the ground, and then she touches it. But the mummy's on her now and starts strangling her. So she calls him by name, you know, Ramset. And then she takes off her glasses saying, "Don't you know who I am? It's me, your girl, Princess Nephra." And the mummy looks at her like, "Are you sure?" And then Stella puts on the headdress and the mummy caresses her cheek. Over with the boys, Finley is pouring some drinks and says, "That is my grandfather." And we see Reggie is looking at a portrait of Finley's grandpa, which is on display. So Finley calls him a son of a bitch who looted tombs up and down the Nile. That old mummy Ramset's been in our family for generations now, passed on from father to son. Sort of a sacred trust. And Reggie thinks it sounds more like a sacred curse and asks why Finley didn't just burn down the whole house. And Finley calls him an idiot. And that Ramset is a living connection to ancient Egypt, and it is the greatest treasure ever, and it's all his. And the only problem is that maidens are getting harder and harder to find these days. So Reggie giggles and tells Finley that he's a sick son of a bitch. And Finley sighs and thinks aloud that Reggie is more of a malt liquor kind of guy. But he should give this a try anyway, because this shit's just super good, and he hands him a glass.
Don't do it.
Cheers, and the boys take a sip.
Don't do it, Reggie.
With that, Reggie takes a step away from Finley, saying, "All right, I kept my end of the deal. Now it's time for yours." And Finley asks Reggie to slow down and relax and enjoy his drink. Reggie is all business here, demanding that he hands him over the midterm. So Finley walks over to his desk and starts pulling out some papers.
It's so stupid.
I know it is.
It's so stupid. Hand over the midterm. It's so sick, like a big drug deal.
It's over a midterm. It's all for paper.
Such low stakes for Reggie.
I love the low stakes episodes, though.
He'll murder a woman for some papers.
It's so dumb.
While that's all happening, Reggie just opens up a box that happens to have, like, cigars in it for some reason, and he helps himself to one. Finley hands Reggie a paper, and Reggie looks at it, saying, "A C+. Like, he's murdering a person for a C+ grade on one test.
Yeah, it's... he's a terrible negotiator.
Ugh, Finley snaps, "Surely you don't expect a better grade than that." And Reggie tells him, "Nah, the grade's fine, but it just isn't enough." Finley's all, "Huh? What you talk about? What's all this hubba now?" As Reggie strikes a match and lights up his stolen cigar. Reggie puffs on that, saying, I bet all that crap you have downstairs is worth a small fortune. So Finley calls him a miserable little rat turd and accuses him of blackmail. Reggie takes a seat, smiling, saying, "Nah, think of it as like a last minute negotiation change." Finley hands him over the glass of whatever the hell he was drinking with a smile, saying that he likes the original terms a little better. Reggie doesn't like them terms, though, so, you know, it's his way or the highway. In the classroom, Finley runs the show, but here, in Finley's own house, Reggie calls the shots.
Don't do it, Reggie.
He takes another sip of the drink, and Finley's all, "Man, you really don't listen to class, do you? Not even the lecture of the ancient art of embalming, which is just so awesome. Even the most dim-witted nitwits in class usually perk up. It's just that gross, you know?" Reggie snaps, "What's your point, old man?" And Finley asks, "Do you recall what I said this instrument was used for?" And he lifts up like a sharp, barbed, pointy instrument. It's the one that you use. You put it in the nose and then you scoop out the brain.
Yeah, right? We all know that.
What's it called, though?
COVID test.
Yeah, it's a COVID test.
Pretty much.
Reggie doesn't know what that shit is. So Finley explains it's for removing the brain through the nose. And Reggie's, "Okay, you done yet?" And Finley isn't. So he asks if Reggie recalls how the ancient embalmers removed the other internal organs. Reggie doesn't care, so Finley stands up saying they'd mix a potion or a drink, whatever you fancy, and they'd pour it down the throat of the corpses. After a short time, the organs would dissolve into a thick sludge and would ooze out of the body through the mouth or the ass. Now Reggie here looks over at his glass and asks, "Wait, you trying to psych me out?" And Finley tells him, "No.
I'm trying to kill you."
"No, Mr. Reggie, I expect you to die."
Oh, man. Reggie realizes now that his insides are about to become his outsides for a moment, then says, "Wait, but you drank it too." And Finley thinks for a second, saying, "Did I?" Did you see me pour both drinks from the same container? Of course not. You weren't paying attention as usual.
Inconceivable.
Dum dum dum.
Reggie gets up and is about to go over to Finley, but his vision cuts down to about 20 frames per second, and he kneels down a little. We see some sludge oozing down his pant legs as Finley laughs. Reggie coughs a bunch until that ooze starts flowing out of his mouth and gets just everywhere. Like, it's all over Finley. It's all over Finley's walls. Reggie vomits his guts out one final time, and then he fucking dies.
That's got to be the worst way to go ever. Just shitting and vomiting your organs out.
He didn't even feel like his, you know, guts dissolving or anything. He's just like,
no.
The tickles.
Yeah, yeah. Like, wait a minute. You, I mean, still trying to argue, not in immense pain at all. Yeah. And then just, okay, now it's all coming out.
Yeah, he's like, my kidney kind of tickles, like nothing.
Not even a little bit. He's not like, and then vomiting it now out. No, like he has time to like look down and be like, huh, is that my spleen?
Yeah. Is this black ooze me?
Am I shitting out my lungs right now?
Finley cleans up his face, and then he grabs that embalming hook and gets to work. All in the name of science, you guys. In the basement, we see Finley dragging Reggie's body down the stairs. He's thumping it on every step. He sets Reggie down in a sarcophagus, and he closes that shit up. Then he takes out a napkin and starts dabbing his face. But from behind him, that tomb door starts to slowly open up, and Finley looks behind him. He gets up, he starts walking over, and he looks on inside. And inside that tomb, we see the mummy is just standing there, outside of his sarcophagus. So Finley stupidly walks on inside, and he's all looking around, when the door behind him just slowly closes. And he's just like, oh, okay. Then he calls out, alright, what the hell is this? But Stella walks out from behind the mummy, and she's dressed just like the cover for this episode.
Oh my god.
Finley's all, oh my god, Stella, you're alive! And Stella sassily tells him to call her Princess Nephra and smiles over at the mummy. Then she touches the mummy's chest and she says, that's what he calls me. Finley can't believe what he's seeing, and Stella tells him that she's the perfect student. She listens in class and takes excellent notes. And Finley asks, huh? So Stella more firmly says,
I listen in class. To your stupid, boring lectures. I write down every word you say, so I figured it out.
The Legends of Ramseth and Nephra. By the way, his name is Ramseth, I think, not Seth, but whatever. Mm-hmm. The mummy that wouldn't die. All that shit. She remembered it all. So she played along with that sack of rags. And boy, was he happy to see some Stella. She pokes on Finley's chest now, saying, do you understand what I'm saying? Finley kind of does understand a little and is saying, wait, so you and he? And she snaps, yes, he put makeup on me.
Where did that makeup come from?
I don't know. It's just chilling in that tomb. Maybe it was in her fanny pack. I don't know. Because she doesn't have her glasses on. She's got like eyeliner on and stuff and that skimpy outfit. Like, was that all just down there? I don't know.
Yeah.
I mean, it's Geoffrey Jones. I'm sure it was already down there.
Yeah, he was just waiting for somebody to come and check out his junk, so makes sense. Finley asks Stella to keep her voice down since it's like upsetting the mummy, and we see the mummy is getting a bit agitated. And Stella thinks about that for a second, saying, oh yeah, there was one more thing you said in class about how jealous Ramseth was. Let's see if you were right. Then she puts her hands all over Finley, asking him for a kissy wissy, and starts smooching the air. But that's enough for the mummy though, so he starts attacking Finley and holding him up against the wall. And Stella lifts up that embalming hook, saying, oh goodness, look what I found. And the mummy snatches that from her. Then he plunges that hook right into Finley's nose, and it's super gross.
Mm-hmm.
There's blood everywhere. I mean, like, it cuts a lot, so we don't actually see it going into his nose. But the mummy pulls it out, and there's, like, some connecty bits on it. I was kind of expecting a whole-ass brain, but...
Yeah, that's fine. Yeah. But it's kind of hard to pull that out through a nose, though.
Or at the very least, repeated times to more than just one little piece. Because right now, it's okay. Dude's lobotomized, but he's still alive.
Yeah, I wanted a little more. Like what we got is fine. You get like a, you know, a big piece of brain and like some connective bits and stuff, like sinuses or whatever. Mm-hmm. I wanted him to just pull it out and it to be a whole fucking brain on there. That'd be so stupid.
Just a perfectly formed,
yes,
model brain.
I wanted it to be a whole brain. We cut to sometime later. Okay, like we're out of the basement now. Like that is just done. We cut to sometime later, and there's a woman stomping down the hallway towards the student exhibit room, and Stella's next to her in her old nerd clothes and glasses. So she got out? I don't know. It doesn't matter. They walk into the room, and there's a man there, and the woman introduces herself as the dean or whatever. It doesn't matter. And she also introduces Stella Bishop, because I guess her last name is Bishop. Stella asks, what's going on? And the man, Detective Connors, introduces himself. So Stella asks, okay, why are we introducing all these characters at the end of the episode? What's going on? So Connor tells her, yeah, it's about your class project. Stella asks, oh.
Did I get a good grade?
And Connors looks at the dean and then says, let's talk about this downtown. So we look behind Stella to see her project, and it's the bodies of Reggie and Finley. They're all wrapped up like mummies and in their own open sarcophaguses. Their mouths are all open like they've seen some shit. And there's this little paper pinned on the outside that says Egyptian Mummies Class Project by Stella Bishop. And it's got a little teacher grade on it. And it says very good. A plus.
Who gave her that grade? They didn't recognize. Oh my God.
So before we finish out the rest of the episode with the Crypt Keeper, the actor who was the detective, the police officer, I don't know if you two know who he is. But no. That is Julius Carey, and I freaking love him. I absolutely love him. He quick filmography. He was one off character, I think, on Boy Meets World. Anybody who has seen Briscoe County Jr., he played Bowler. He was fantastic in that. But I know him most as Shownuff from The Last Dragon. The Last Dragon is a cheesy blaxploitation. It's not in that time period. It's 80s, it's a blaxploitation 80s martial arts action movie, and it is cheesy. And this guy was this guy played the main villain, and every time he would walk in, he's in this like samurai attire. His hair is in this weird Japanese configuration.
I'm looking at him right now. He looks fabulous.
He has one of those. He has those sunglasses that aren't sunglasses. They were just those slits all the way across. And as soon as he would walk in a room, and he'd have this horde of people who would follow him. As soon as he'd enter this room, he'd scream out, "Am I the meanest?" And the crowd would go, "Shownuff." Am I the prettiest? Shownuff. Am I the baddest, most low-down mofo about this town? Shownuff. And as soon as I saw him in this movie, I went, Shownuff! Or in this episode. And of course, he's super downplayed it. He's a forgettable character, really. But just the fact that it was him, I was like, oh, Shownuff!
I wasn't even going to mention him, honestly.
He's
not in this episode enough.
He's in like 20 seconds.
The history of things that he's done is like, oh man, that it completely overshadows anything that he's done in this episode. But but seriously, I want to take the opportunity to say, if you've not seen either The Last Dragon or Briscoe County Jr., go check both of them out. They're fantastic. Cheesy and fun.
I love it. Yeah, that's awesome. I'm really glad that you brought that up, because like I said, I wasn't going to mention Detective Connors or the dean at all. Like, we were just going to go over the other main characters. So, yeah, I appreciate that. This ending, though, you guys, like, my first thought was also, who gave her that grade? Because the person that would
is that Professor Finley?
The mummy.
He's dead? Oh, okay. A+.
Very, very good. Yeah. That little note, too. Like, this is great. Like, you're in college. You don't need the little tiny notes on stuff anymore.
Star stickers.
Yeah. It's so stupid. With that, though, it's the end of that portion of the tale, because back with the Crypt Keeper, he's got a bunch of books around him and he's reading by candlelight, and he says, "Ugh, I guess that's a wrap for Reggie and Professor Finley. You know what they say, kiddies, Nephra say Nephra again."
Oh, God.
He gives a sensible chuckle. He does. As for me, I gotta get back to my corpse catalog and decide on a major. I thought going pre-dead, but I think I'd be better at Shriekonomics. And he laughs. The end. So yeah, that was the episode, you guys. What'd you think?
Good. It's very good.
It was a good episode.
The ending, I gotta say, like, is Stella like a little bit crazy now or what? Like, what's her deal?
Dude, she just had sex with a mummy. She is crazy now.
Okay, yeah, I guess that changes. That changes a woman.
She was a virgin. She is no longer. Her first time was with a mummy. You are changed forever.
Yeah, all right.
My thing with the ending, I thought it was silly. Like, I think you could forget the ending and it'd be a little bit better of an episode or whatever. But why did she go back to nerd clothes? You know, like, obviously it's because they didn't want, like, they filmed this when she was in the nerd clothes. You know, they didn't want to get her dressed back up in the Princess Nefertiti's or, I don't know.
Dude.
Why is she a nerd again? Why would you go back to being a nerd when you found out that there's makeup? I don't get it.
What if she now does what the teacher was doing? She relies on that for the next few years to lure in virgin boys, and then plays up the jealousy aspect and uses them as the ritual sacrifice from here on out.
Well, then it was a bad idea to go be in prison, which is what's going to happen to her now.
Oh, the mummy will break her out. He'll find a way. Oh, sure. You should never stop him.
So basically what you're saying is this is a prequel to Under Wraps?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm down for it.
Oh, man. Okay, so the moral of the story, did you guys learn anything from watching Creep Course?
Yeah, just don't fuck with Jeffrey Jones, like, at all. In any any context.
He's got that voice, you know? That's what he does. That's just how he, like, sits naturally and just makes noises. Yeah.
Come see my Egyptian collection. Come
see my junk.
Yeah, my thing was going to be stay out of the teacher's basement.
Yeah. Stay That's out of the good basement advice. In general. Yeah.
Stay out of anybody's basement. Did nobody see, like, Silence of the Lambs?
No. I think, so what I learned is, like, this college is bullshit and don't go to it. I don't know what this college is, but, like, who's grading that shit? Who puts very good on the assignments? What the hell's going on? All you learn is just fantasy stories. Like, that's no practical use for anything. Plus, yeah. Their football team sucks now.
Definitely. Got nothing going for them.
No reason to go to unnamed college. Lame. So, Creep Course, you guys. Do you think we can come up with a better title than that? I think we already did with Don't, you know, Stay Out of the Basement. But
I was going to call it Mummy Gets Lucky.
Yeah, he does. Spoilers. Tell the Guardian's curse. There you go, you guys.
Yeah, that works.
Mummy's alive. Mummy knows best. All the things that we said last episode, Brandon.
It all still works, yeah.
Mummy puns, etc. You want to meet the cast? Let's go ahead and see who these people are, what they've been in, what they did after this. Starting with Professor Finley, played by Jeffrey Jones.
Yeah, what did Jeffrey Jones do after this?
Prison.
My take on Jeffrey Jones.
He did some great performances in prison there for a while.
I don't know Jeffrey Jones, but I know his face. What? So,
oh, yeah, dude. He's been in, like, Beetlejuice. And
he was in Beetlejuice.
Yeah.
Yeah,
he was in Beetlejuice. He was in Ed Wood, which you watched not too long ago.
Yeah.
Who did he play in Ed Wood?
He was one of the other actors.
He was Criswell.
Oh, okay. Okay.
He was in Sleepy Hollow, the Tim Burton Sleepy Hollow movie.
A lot of Tim Burton stuff. Okay. Yeah, he was the dad in Beetlejuice, right?
Yeah, and he was in he was the dad in Beetlejuice. He was the principal in Ferris Bueller's Day Off.
Okay. Well, he started things off in 1970 with The Revolutionary. He played red-haired radical committee member. Classic role.
Yeah.
He was in 1985, something called Transylvania 6-5000. That sounds pretty awesome.
Oh, yeah, that was with Jeff Goldblum.
Oh,
that
sounds great. Okay.
Well, that might pique my interest quite a bit. And, I was just going to make fun of it.
And Kramer was in that, too.
What? It,
yeah. Oh, it's such a horrible 80s, I think it's 80s, comedy. It was like shoestring budget. You can tell just by the quality of the camera. It is not good. Mm-hmm. It's one of those that you watch it and you laugh at how much nobody else is laughing at it.
I love that. Okay, those are like my favorite movies.
What a cast, though.
Oh, yeah, this is a solid cast for it.
Gina Davis, Ed Begley Jr., Carol Kane.
Oh, man. Okay, well, now we have to watch it. He was in Fallout 2, a post-nuclear role-playing game, which is kind of like, you know, they just had that Fallout series, mm-hmm. So that's cool.
Yeah, Fallout's hot shit now.
Stuart Little. Guys, he was in Stuart Little.
Oh, gosh.
Yeah.
Cool. That is Uncle Crenshaw.
Invader Zim, The Lost Installments, which is a podcast series from 2005. They had podcasts back in 2005?
Yeah.
Okay. Most recently, he was in Deadwood, the movie from 2019. So he's kind of still working, right?
Yeah, he's still working somehow.
Yeah, he's not been doing as much because, I mean, he was found not guilty for his crimes, but he still had to register as a sex offender. And then,
what did he do? Was he showing kids his junk again?
He was he was taking photographs of boys.
Oh,
and
other kids' junk.
Yeah, right. And that was it. He was arrested for making child pornography, but he didn't do anything to them. But which is why he was found not guilty. But he still had to register as a sex offender. And then on the set of Deadwood, I believe it was, the crew was not informed of him being a registered sex offender, and someone had found out, and then they got mad at the crew or those in charge for not telling people that he was a registered sex offender because they were bringing their kids to set. And they're like, I would have preferred to tell me this so I wouldn't bring my kids. I know he is an adult. I know he has to work and all of these things, and I'm fine to work with him. I don't want to bring my kids. And since then, he's been doing less and less, probably for that very reason.
Okay, that makes sense. It's awful, too. I don't like to talk about that shit.
Yeah.
It's all rough. Let's talk about the next character here, you guys. We got Anthony Michael Hall, who played Reggie, and he's got three names, so he's got to be big. What do you guys know Anthony Michael Hall from?
Go ahead, Brandon.
I mean, his run in the 80s, like a teen movie, 16 Candles, Breakfast Club, Weird Science. That's his thing. And his career is so weird to me because, like, those movies are, like, so huge and he's very iconic in them. And then, like, just a few years later, he's, like, this big buff jock guy in every movie. And I can't reconcile those two things in my mind. Like, those are two different people to me.
Yeah, because he's the nerd in Breakfast Club, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, Brian.
Wow. That's weird.
But the thing that I remember, and it was much like what you had said, Brandon, it was that huge shift, because it didn't slowly morph into that for me, because I knew him from Breakfast Club and all those kinds of movies, and then he did The Dead Zone, which was a TV series on TNT or USA or something like that, and now he's this really cool character, and I didn't know they were the same person until, like, years later. I was like, oh, this looks like a fun show, and I never did get the chance to check it out because my parents were very conservative, and there was a lot of things I couldn't watch. And then whenever I was an adult and I was starting to check it out, it's like, Anthony Michael Hall, why is that name so familiar? Holy crap, are you kidding me?
Well, you want to know what nobody remembers him from? His breakout role, Jennifer's Journey from 1979.
I would have to agree with that.
But then he was in something called Rascals and Robbers, The Secret Adventures of Tom Sawyer and Huck Finn. They were all rascals. Yeah, he got buff, and then he was in, like, NYPD Blue and shit, so that's something. I'm stalling here to see if I recognize anything. I guess he was in The Crow, Stairway to Heaven, which was a TV series about The Crow. I didn't know that existed.
Yeah, there were so many times he tried to get The Crow to take off after the first one, and it never took off. Take a hint.
No, yeah. More recently, 2013, he was in something called Zombie Night, which is the most, like, basic zombie movie title I've ever heard. It has a 3.5 on IMDb, so it's got to be good. He was in American Dad and Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. Oh, he was in Halloween Kills. I haven't watched that yet. That's the one I don't need to watch.
That one's bad.
Yeah.
That's what I thought. He was in The Goldbergs for 9 whole fucking episodes, so that's cool. Most recently, Air Force One Down from 2024. That's the name.
He's still working.
Still doing it. Last up, let's talk about Stella Bishop, who was played by somebody who I can't pronounce her name. Nina Samasco. I don't know.
Yeah, let's go with that. Samasco.
Cortland, I am so happy to hear that I'm not the only one who struggles with names.
Oh, it happens every week. Yeah.
It's become a thing now. It's become a thing on our show whenever I would try to read somebody's name, and then if I can't pronounce it, I will completely find ways to mispronounce it just so that way I look less inept.
Yeah. No, I do the same. It's okay. I always have to apologize though, because I know Nina's listening in, and she's sorry, Nina. One of her pictures here on IMDb, though, she's got like that weird like 90s crunchy hair, and it looks really odd on her. Sorry, Nina. But let's take a look here. Let me expand her profile. She's got kind of a lot of stuff going on here. Started off 1986 with One More Saturday Night. Spoilers, we got a lot more Saturday Nights since 1986.
Gosh.
Also in Bed and Breakfast, Wild Orchid 2, Two Shades of Blue, Reservoir Dogs deleted scenes, but I don't see her in regular Reservoir Dogs, so Bummer. She was deleted out of that movie, I guess.
That would have made her career.
She was in Baby Brokers. I wonder if that's like Baby Geniuses.
No, yeah, the sequel, whenever they go straight in. Not even Super Geniuses. Like, that's the one direct-to-video sequel in between the movies.
Look, Baby Geniuses is a movie that I kind of refuse to watch ever.
As you should. As you should.
Yeah. She was in Judging Amy in 2004, as well as like some CSI and NYPD Blue, whatever shows. Then she was in Grand Theft Auto San Andreas, where she was a radio commercial voice. That's pretty cool.
Yeah, she's one of those actresses that doesn't really have anything that most audiences would recognize her from, but she's been in a ton of supporting roles throughout her career. And it's one of those, once you recognize her, you'll see her in several other things and you didn't realize she was there.
Yeah, like The Bling Ring or Jack and Dexter, The Lost Frontier. I don't remember that game, though. Do you remember that one, Brandon?
I do, yeah.
When was it?
It was a late PS2, PSP game.
Oh, okay. The last thing she was in was the Haley Dean Mystery in 2018.
One episode. Cool.
Yeah. That's kind of our cast, though. I mean, I'm not going to talk about Dean Edna Cum, because she wasn't in the episode very much.
I'm sorry, what was her name again?
I'm not going to repeat myself. And you know what, though? Let's talk about The Mummy. He did move. So, The Mummy is played by Ivan E. Roth.
Yeah, what else did he move in? Whoa. His IMDb photos are awesome.
Yeah, they are. I think that must be from Night of the Creeps, maybe? Because he was in that movie?
Yeah, it is.
I gotta see that. Have you seen Night of the Creeps, Alex?
No, I haven't.
That looks awesome. Gosh,
that looks so good. He started things off 1973 with Arnold's Wrecking Co. He played Kenny as a child. He was in Night of the Comet and Night of the Creeps, so lots of nights. I think he's one of those guys that just, like, you put him in makeup and then you're like,
yeah, right, yeah. Around. He's like a Doug Jones. Every one of his credits is like zombie, freak, monster.
Yeah, he, a less successful Doug Jones. Sorry, Ivan. But that's our cast. Let's see what we're going to be talking about next week, because we're going to have Manny on next week. So, spoilers, we're going to have another guest on from Splatsec. We're going to have Manny on. Hopefully this episode's not too scary for him. It's called Came the Dawn.
All right. That's the title, I guess.
Yeah. I mean, my immediate reaction is vampires, but maybe Dawn is a person. You know, it could be a play on Dawn. So this reads, a lecherous millionaire offers a lift to a beautiful seductress in the middle of nowhere with horrific consequences.
Okay. Yeah, sure. Freaky hitchhiker story. We haven't had one of those yet.
No, but we are going to have Brooke Shields in this episode. Brandon, you love Brooke Shields, don't you?
Do I?
I don't know. Making things up here?
I bet if you say the same phrase, you love Brooke Shields, don't you? I bet Manny would say, oh, I love Brooke Shields. And then you ask her, then you ask him about it, and he'd be like, no, I don't know. I would place in my bet right there.
Yeah, I'm a big Suddenly Susan fan.
Uh-huh. How about Perry King? Do you know who Perry King is, either of you guys?
Nope.
I know who Perry Mason is.
That's the same thing.
How about Michael J. Pollard?
Oh, so close. No.
What about Valerie Wildman?
No.
These aren't even real.
Cool.
Bunch of nobodies.
That's what happens, is I start naming the cast, and it's like, wait, these people aren't real. Never mind. But you know what? That's next week. So, Alex, I just want to say thanks so much for joining us. This was a lot of fun.
Yeah.
Where can people find you? What have you been up to? Tell me everything about Splat Attack.
Splat Attack. We do all kinds of stuff. Like, by the time this episode releases, we will have released our 45th anniversary of Nickelodeon, where we got to talk to the former CEO of Nickelodeon. We got to have Geraldine Laybourne on, and she was telling us about her time doing being head of Nickelodeon. A lot of great stuff. You can check us out on YouTube, along with pretty much most social media platforms. Not social media platforms, but podcast platforms. Apple Podcasts, Spotify, all that stuff. Yes, we do also have a lot of social media platforms. Just look for Splat Attack Podcast and you should find us. It's pretty simple.
Yeah, so you're smart and you had all of your social media accounts be like the same, whereas ours are all over the place. So kudos to you. That's awesome. I love your show, though. I mean, definitely, if you're going to be watching Splat Attack, YouTube is probably the way to go. There's a lot of visual elements for the show, so you're not going to get that with just the voices and stuff. So check them out on YouTube.
I've started to see a trend in our numbers where at first it was kind of even. We started off just audio, but we wanted to incorporate video. And then once we hit the 30th anniversary of Are You Afraid of the Dark and we had the whole cast reunion. And I said, we got to do that. We got to do a Zoom call. We got to see this because we don't know when we'll see this again. And then after that, it was just, okay, how much more can we incorporate videos? And now I've started to see our audio downloads slowly go down, but our videos slowly go up. So yeah, if it's awesome. we're teetering on more of a vidcast than podcast, but it's there is a lot of video element to it, but there's still plenty for audio listeners to enjoy.
It definitely works. I've been a part of a couple of your Versus episodes, and they're wonderful. You know, we do kind of what we do with Up All Night, where we're describing the tale and everything, and there's a lot of visual elements that go along with it. So if you have seen an episode, but you can't quite remember it, maybe it's one of those ones that you saw as a kid and you're like, oh yeah, I remember that a little bit. It's a great way to just kind of like follow along the story and see the pictures and stuff. And they're great. A lot of funny moments. You guys do awesome stuff.
Thank you. Thank you. Appreciate it.
My pleasure.
Always a pleasure to have you.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. My pleasure. I'm really excited. I know we've had Kat on already. Her episode hasn't come out yet. It's coming out next week, I believe. And then, you know, we had you on, and then we're going to have Manny on. The whole gang. We're collecting them all like Pokemon cards. It's great.
Just got to get Jordy. He's the last one.
I don't know if I've talked to Jordy yet.
I don't think you've had Jordy on. I don't think he has been on an episode where you've had, because we, like we said earlier, we both were on the Real Life Perspective show with Sean, and we had almost all Splat Attack crew members there. The only one we didn't have was Jordy, because he was busy at the time, but he's there. He's one of the, he's the mummy, the sarcophagus. He's back there. He only shows up when you really need him to. But he does a lot of behind the scenes things for our show, and he's fantastic. The whole crew is great. I love all of them.
Awesome. I love that. And you guys are going to be going to SplatCon soon, right?
We are. SplatCon is October 19th and 20th. No, it has nothing to do with Splat Attack. It's just another convention that is all about 90s Nickelodeon, and it's run by fans for fans. So anybody who's like, ooh, Nickelodeon, no, it's celebrating the people that we love and enjoy. And the whole crew is going to be there. It's going to be our first time actually seeing each other in person. So I'm really excited about that. And it's going to be a lot of fun. There's going to be other podcasters there. I believe Ready to Retro is going to be out there, and there's going to be some others, but it's going to be a lot of fun. And I'm really excited too. It's going to be in LA at the Hilton LAX. So go check it out.
I love it. Well, I just want to say thanks so much again for joining us for this episode. Any like final thoughts? Anything you guys want to say before we wrap it up?
Secrets of the Crypt Keeper's Haunted House. YouTube it. Check it out. We have it's
to
fun. Watch it.
Yeah.
I'm going to.
I love that. I'm definitely going to. Well, you guys, I've been up all night. I just want to say thanks again, Alex, for joining us.
Thank you.
Brandon, I'll talk to you next week with Manny for Come the Dawn. Game the Dawn. Game the Dawn. Do
that one. You're obsessed with Come.
I am not, Brandon. Oh my God. Whatever. I'm all right. I'm out of here. Fuck all y'all. I'm out.
Bye.
Bye. Disappointed.